We're looking at the Supreme Court's decision not to take on emoluments cases against former President Donald Trump. The Emoluments Clause of the Constitution prevents a federal office holder, including the president, from profiting from their government position. This clause is the reason that most presidents temporarily give up their financial stake in businesses while they're in office. Emoluments cases have rarely been considered in court because it's uncommon for presidents to keep active business interests when they're leading the country. Not so with President Trump. Various lawsuits accused him of profiting off his restaurants and businesses while in office, most notably the Trump Hotel on Pennsylvania Avenue in Washington, D.C. We're looking at why the Supreme Court rejected emoluments cases against Trump and what that could mean for the courts and for politicians in federal office moving forward. Juliet Sorensen is a clinical professor of law at Northwestern University Pritzker School of Law and the executive director of Injustice Watch. That's an organization that investigates institutional obstruction of justice and equality. She's also the co-author of Public Corruption and the Law, Cases and Materials. Juliet, thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
What was the argument for this decision to throw out emoluments cases against the former president?
Well, importantly, there was no justification offered along with the Supreme Court's decision. It was two brief orders in which the court dismissed rulings against President Trump in the two cases coming from the lower courts and dismissed them as moot. They were dismissed as moot because President Trump is no longer president of the United States, of course.
And with that move, though, because Trump is no longer in office and it's a moot point, that means there's no official Supreme Court interpretation of the Emoluments Clause in the Constitution. What should we glean from that?
The court has given us no guidance as to where it would go if an emoluments clause case reached it in the future. The court can only hear cases that are justiciable. That is to say, there has to be a live controversy before the court. And in this case, the emoluments clauses of the Constitution very clearly apply to, in one instance, the President of the United States, and in another instance, any federal officer of the United States. Since Donald Trump is no longer either one of those, the case is moot, and the Supreme Court literally does not have the power to hear it. So what does the future hold? Well, first of all, there would need to be another either president or officer of the United States, in the case of the Domestic Emoluments Clause, who allegedly violated it. Then there would need to be a lawsuit brought, and it would need to be litigated all the way up to the court. So a lot of hurdles and a lot of scenarios to be played out before the Supreme Court might ever have the opportunity to interpret the Emoluments Clause in the future.
There's a pretty clear parallel between that and what some lawmakers, including U.S. Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin, have said about impeachment. They say that because the president is out of office, it doesn't make sense to impeach. What are the drawbacks of prosecuting a president who's no longer in office, whether it is through lawsuits or through impeachment?
The question of whether to proceed with a second trial of Donald Trump, he has already been impeached for a second time, really is not a legal question. It is more a question of politics and policy, which is really one for Congress's leaders to decide. I can see, however, the overlap, which is to say there is a certain sense that of what's the point? Isn't this all now moot? Shouldn't we collectively move on? The Democratic leadership apparently felt otherwise, at least enough to bring the article of impeachment in the House of Representatives.
So the argument may be the same, but we're dealing with a legal issue on one side, and you say the other is really more about politics.
Exactly.
We're talking with law professor Juliet Sorensen. She's Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law there. There's time for you to join our conversation here on Central Time. You can call 800-642-1234. What do you think of the Supreme Court's decision to reject foreign and domestic emoluments cases against former President Trump? Do you think that Trump violated the Emoluments Clause while in office? What do you think about the future if we do have to wait for another high-profile member of our government to be in this position. Give us a call. Share your thoughts at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You mentioned that there were no dissenting votes, and the court didn't comment on this decision to dismiss these cases. But lower courts in the past, they have gone after the former president on these allegations of violations of this clause. What were the arguments in favor of pursuing those cases while the president was in office?
Yes, you're right. Lower courts have ruled against the president, the former president, with regard to emoluments clause violations. There was a case brought in New York and there was a case brought in Maryland, and they were consolidated for the purposes of going up to the Supreme Court. The New York case was brought by competitors of Donald Trump's businesses that said that they had been disadvantaged by the payments that he had received while in the White House. Again, payments that improperly advantaged his private business interests, even though he was serving in public office at the time. The Maryland lawsuit accused President Trump of violating the Constitution very specifically by profiting from his Washington hotel. The allegations were that he received these so-called emoluments, which you can think of as assets or benefits, in the form of money from foreign government, also from federal agencies and state governments that conducted business at that hotel, which I understand was doing a pretty brisk business during the years of the Trump administration, and why to curry favor with Donald Trump and his presidential administration.
We're taking calls at 800-642-1234, and Cindy in Appleton wants to join the conversation. Hi, Cindy.
Well, I just want to say how really disgusted I am about all this. I mean, this man has been a criminal all the while he was in the White House, not only with the emolument clause, but also with his insurrection and supporting all these hate groups. It just disturbs me that this man is going to walk away with no penalization of any kind.
Cindy, thanks for talking with us about that and sharing your perspective. I mean, Juliet, Trump did have conflicts of interest during his presidency. Why wasn't that fact enough to get these cases through court while they applied?
So specifically with regard to the emoluments clause, it was uncharted territory. It's almost never been litigated in the past. And I will say that courts in general are very cautious about circumscribing the president of the United States. But Cindy, I wouldn't give up hope completely if you hope that our former president sees a measure of accountability for his actions while in the White House. I do think that some efforts to hold him accountable for different actions will not be successful. That includes these court orders on the emoluments clause, and I think it most likely includes this latest effort to impeach and convict him. However, there are currently a number of other investigations, both criminal and ethical internal investigations, going on into his conduct and the conduct of his presidency.
We mentioned earlier that there is a separation between law in some circumstances and politics in others. Some people don't see it that way, and they're concerned that the courts will be political either way, whether those cases come out in favor of former President Donald Trump or against him. You know, as a legal expert, can you reassure us at all?
You know, I would say that many federal judges who became federal judges during Donald Trump's presidency have ruled against his efforts to throw out the results of the presidential election in November. The Supreme Court, as we know, contains multiple Trump appointees. They have ruled in an increasingly conservative fashion, which is exactly what I believe the president was hoping for. But not in a way that that signals to me that they're going to utterly pander to him as an individual. So I think that the so-called Article III judges, those federal judges with life tenure, they may have political ideologies, but they also have a respect for rule of law and due process. And I think they'll follow their nose where it takes them. Mm-hmm.
Juliet Sorensen stays with us. She's a clinical professor of law at the Northwestern University Pritzker School of Law. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about this process? What concerns you about moving into the future? Or do you think that this makes sense and that it was the right decision, legal or political? Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can tweet us at Central Time WPR. Join in now as we continue the conversation here on Central Time. You're listening to the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Keeley Boltina. We're talking with legal expert Juliet Sorensen about the Supreme Court rejecting emoluments cases against former President Donald Trump. And we do want to hear from you. What questions do you have about these cases or the Supreme Court? Right now, you can send us an email to ideas@WPR.org. And I want to welcome Jesse in Madison to our conversation. Hi, Jesse.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind here?
So out of curiosity, as I was listening to this show, I'm wondering, so the Supreme Court is not going to hear the case due to the fact that the president is no longer in office. It seems odd to me because the Supreme Court can try cases for murder, which clearly are not, like, the murderer is not in a state of murder at the time. So I'm just curious as to how that actually legally plays out. Why he couldn't be tried for crimes that he committed during while he was in office.
Jesse, let me jump in here because it's a little bit hard to hear you, but we did get your question, and that is, why does the emoluments clause, why would they only be able to take the case if the president were in office? Juliet.
Yeah, thank you, Jesse. It's a great question. So the emoluments clauses state very clearly that they apply to an officer or a president. I see your point, because if the violation has already occurred, then that doesn't necessarily make it become undone. It doesn't mean that it didn't happen, to use your analogy to murder or a criminal prosecution. If an act is committed, the prosecution can follow. It's actually not the case, though, with a civil lawsuit. This is not a criminal case, but this is a civil lawsuit. And civil suits can be dismissed if there is no active controversy or case before the court. And that's the case here. It's, in some sense, it's a technicality, but it's a technicality that, as you can imagine, every lawyer and every defendant sued in a civil case would want to use if it applies to them, because it makes your case go away and you're done with it.
Mm. Jesse, thanks for asking that question to clarify. We have another follow-up question from Rick in Waupaca. Hey, Rick.
Hello.
What are you thinking about? Hi.
I didn't quite understand. Was there a lower court ruling and then it ended up in the Supreme Court as an appeal? And if so, if the Supreme Court didn't have standing, why wouldn't the lower court ruling simply stand?
Rick, thanks for the question. Juliet, can you break that down for us?
Yes, thank you. So, yes, there were actually originally there were three lawsuits against President Trump alleging violations of the Emoluments Clause. One of those was dismissed in February, and the Supreme Court declined to hear that case. The other two went up on appeal to the federal courts of appeals in New York and Maryland, and the plaintiffs who sued President Trump won on appeal. Trump himself then appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. And by the time it reached the Supreme Court, he was no longer president and the court dismissed the cases as moot. So the Supreme Court therefore vacates all previous rulings in the cases below in the lower courts. And there is no definitive outcome to the lawsuit.
And Juliet, that's different than when the Supreme Court just declines to take a case and another court ruling stands as the actual answer.
That's correct. They didn't decline to take the case. They actually ruled on it and dismissed it.
Right. We are talking with law professor Juliet Sorensen, who's our guest. She's Northwestern University's Pritzker School of Law. She's with that law school. And we're talking about the context of the U.S. Supreme Court's decision to stop lawsuits accusing former President Trump of profiting off of his public office. Let's talk more about the fact that the courts have been struggling with how to interpret the Emoluments Clause for years. the case brought by the attorneys general of Maryland and D.C. was actually the first time in American history that a court ruled on the meaning of emoluments. And, you know, we saw them thrown out by court several times during Trump's tenure. So why is it so rare for courts to take up this particular clause?
The truth is that the fact that it's rare is a good thing. There's a scholar in this area who wrote a book on the emoluments clause called Ben Franklin's Snuffbox. And it has that funny title because Benjamin Franklin received a snuffbox from King Louis the 16th, if I'm remembering my Louis correctly, of France. That was deemed an improper violation of the emoluments clause. And that's really what the framers were getting at. You know, if you tour a museum in Europe and you see that sort of astounding array of jewels and valuable items that foreign heads of state would bring and give to these rulers, always seeking influence and currying favor, that's exactly what the framers were guarding against. But the truth is that there's a lot more than just the emoluments clause in the Constitution that tries to prevent this type of activity. We have pretty extensive ethical codes of conduct for our federal officials, not to mention our state and local officials, that cabin the type of gifts one can accept, the type of outside business practices or interests that one can engage in. And that is to avoid undue influence and also to avoid, you know, not just actual impropriety, but the appearance of impropriety, of being corrupted or influenced by that outside power.
I want to welcome Dave in Junction City to the conversation. Dave, what are you thinking about as we talk about the emoluments clause?
I'm just wondering, as far as like what it pertains to members of Congress, I mean, there's some anecdotal people who profit from their inside information and legislation going forward that might profit their portfolio. How does that affect what you're talking about?
Thanks for the question, Dave. It really sounds like a follow-up, Juliet, to what you were just talking about the clause applying to other public servants.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Dave. So there are actually two sections in the Constitution that speak to what they call emoluments. And emoluments are really things of value. And it's the Foreign Emoluments Clause that would apply to those members of Congress. It prohibits the federal government generally and restricts members of the federal government from receiving gifts, emoluments. It's also sometimes called the Titles of Nobility Clause. Another country cannot knight a federal officer of the United States. I can't become Lady Juliet. You couldn't become Sir Dave in the United Kingdom. And the goal, again, is to protect against those so-called corrupting foreign influences. Could that apply to members of Congress? You bet.
John from Tomahawk has one more question I think we can squeeze in here. Hey, John.
Hi.
What's your question?
My question would be, is it possible for anybody holding the office of presidents to maintain international business interests and conduct business while in the office of president without, in some shape or manner, violating the clause?
John, thanks for the hypothetical. Juliet, what do you think?
The cleanest and easiest route is not to be engaged in a side business. That keeps the public and the private separate. It prevents against that so-called appearance of impropriety, as well as any actual impropriety. Now, that is different from the question of whether or not it's possible to engage in some side activity without violating the emoluments clause, which essentially, again, provides that an office holder shall not accept anything of value from a foreign state. Now, President Trump has maintained that his business interests have been strictly separate from his official acts and his time in office. These lawsuits sought to show otherwise. They sought to show that really it was impossible to separate them, and that the entire reason that his competitors were losing business to Trump industries. And the entire reason that the Trump Hotel in Washington, D.C. was flourishing was because people were seeking to influence him and get favorable treatment from him. Unfortunately, because of the Supreme Court's ruling, because that question is now moot, we'll have to wait to find that out for another day.
And that's true in courts. From your perspective, are you able to weigh in on whether it appears that Trump violated the Emoluments Clause?
Here's what I would have liked to have had happen. I would have liked these lawsuits to proceed, to engage in so-called pretrial discovery, where the plaintiffs have the right to access financial records, correspondence, emails, invoices, to see what the evidence would show. These lawsuits were dismissed prior to the plaintiffs having had that benefit. So it's too early to say. I am in favor of public officials being transparent and accountable. So I would have liked the cases to go forward. That said, I think that the Supreme Court's ruling, again, on a technicality, is correct here.
Mm-hmm. Juliet, thank you for walking us through all of this. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Juliet Sorensen is a clinical professor of law at the Northwestern University Pritzker School of Law, and she's the executive director of Injustice Watch. That's an organization that investigates institutional obstruction of justice and equality. She's also the co-author of Public Corruption and the Law, Cases and Materials.